You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where I think we've finally conquered all of these technological mishaps to record. Maybe. I don't know. The reason I'm going a little off the cuff with that intro rather than having a written quip as I usually do, because it's that kind of day. When I'm at work at about 8:45 in the morning and a post pops up in my Facebook news feed that says free Brady, and I think to myself, but Brady's already free. And then I realize, oh no, Brady's no longer free. He's suspended again. Because the district or the circuit or whatever fucking court decided, oh, we're just going to uphold the suspension or overturn the ruling by the previous judge by a 2-1 vote. And now we're back here again where it's late spring going into training camp in June and Tom Brady's still suspended, and we have to hear about possibly Jimmy Garoppolo starting. So this is your Midside Sports podcast today. Joining me this trip via Skype from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Talk me off the ledge here, Daniel. Explain to me how Tom Brady is still going to play, even though the suspension was upheld. And when we go in September, it's going to be worth going to watch that game.
Well, it's going to be worth going no matter what.
You really want to see Jimmy G start at quarterback?
Okay, look, you know that at any given point, Tom Brady could fucking sprain an ankle and having wild sex with Giselle and not be able to start. That's the chance you take.
Yeah, the Golden State
That's
Warriors
the chance
are
you
well
take.
Aware of this, right?
Yes, whatever that means. I don't know who they are. I don't know what that is. Is that a dish? Is it spicy?
They're the NBA team who broke the Bulls' regular season winning record. They're defending their title in the NBA, and then their star player, league MVP, Steph Curry, sprained his MCL last night.
Do you know how many people have tuned out now? We've lost like 88% of our audience just
all
because you
people.
Said those words
all
together.
All the people. Hack all the things.
Yes. Okay, so here's the sitch, which is, to clarify for you, this was the Second Circuit Federal Court, and a panel of judges, as you mentioned, ruled 2-1 to reverse the decision of Judge Berman out of the District Court of New York, and basically say that the NFL acted and Goodell acted within their rights in the collective bargaining agreement to suspend Tom Brady, so his suspension is reinstated. This actually, I'm not going to lie to you, Justin. This isn't talking off the ledge like you asked, but I'm not going to lie to you. This is a bad thing. This is a very bad thing for Tom Brady. Here's the good thing. Here's the good thing. Even though his chances of getting an appeal are slim, they're better than usual because you have one federal judge in the District Court of New York ruling in his favor, and you have one judge at this court, federal judge at the Second Circuit ruling in his favor, and you have two ruling in the favor of the NFL. So you essentially have a split of 2-2. And that's a very good argument to do what's called an en banc review, meaning they are going to ask the Second Circuit, all the judges, to use that phrasing,
pack
to hear
the
case, which I think is like 13 fucking judges. It's an enormous number of powdered wigs.
Should
That's
be 12 for Tom Brady.
Well, alas, it will be 13. And if the en banc review is granted, then all of the judges will hear the case and vote. In the meantime, so if they purely ask for this appeal, if they just ask for it, that means his suspension will be stayed, and they have 14 days from today to ask for it. His suspension will be stayed until they decide whether to hear it or not. And if they do decide to hear it, so if this goes, they ask for the appeal, they do decide to hear it, that will almost certainly take longer than the entire 2016 season for them to actually get to the case, because
so
that's how fucking
no
far behind they are.
Appeal.
If
appeal.
They hear the appeal, he will almost certainly not have to serve his suspension for the entire 2016 season. If they choose not to hear his appeal, he will have to immediately go back to the suspension, but it's unclear what that timeline could be. It could be after the first four games of the season, then he could have to immediately. So it could affect the games he is suspended for. The only other route, if they don't hear the appeal, is to ask the Supreme Court to hear the appeal, and that's virtually impossible. I don't think there's a question in this case that is really Supreme Court worthy, unless you get some really fucking clever lawyer to turn it into some constitutional shit. It's not really going to happen. But some issue about collective bargaining agreements that could apply nationwide, and it's just not likely. So,
look, this is what I don't get about this whole thing. Like, I understand everything you just said, and I understand the two judges who ruled that Goodell has the power in the collective bargaining agreement to punish Brady any way he sees fit. I understand that. But I think I've made this argument before on the podcast, and this is the question I have, and you can answer this, and then we'll go on to introducing Elliot. You cannot...
I'm just on here and growler, just biding my time.
You cannot sign a contract that signs away your rights, correct?
Yes. So, I mean, you can sign a contract that says broad, very broad things, but you cannot sign a contract that per se signs away rights. But I don't think that's necessarily the issue that's going on here. It's basically, did Goodell violate the collective bargaining agreement when the collective bargaining agreement says that an independent arbiter will be assigned to decide the commissioner's whether or not his punishment is correct, and the independent arbiter he assigned was himself.
But isn't the greater issue that you can't give someone the power to punish you arbitrarily? Like, that's the issue. Look, I read the Washington Post article. How can you punish someone for being innocent?
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yes. That part is also disturbing, but I don't think that's necessarily the part that's being argued in court. Essentially...
Could be argued, though, to undermine...
I don't... Having worked with lawyers, they don't really much care for principles. Just kidding, lawyers, I love you. But no, they really just are more interested in the technical elements. It's basically, what technical thing can we look at in this that was violated that we can get it overturned? So, I mean, the point you're trying to make is he was punished for being generally aware of something that someone else was doing.
That someone else was possibly doing. There's no proof the other thing was even done.
Right, there's a 51%, the Wells report says basically there's a 51% chance that Brady was generally aware of something that was probably going on. 51%.
Right, there was a 51% chance that he was aware of something that was 51% likely happening.
Yes. So can you punish someone for that? The answer is much more difficult. Essentially, yes, you can punish someone for that, but is a punishment of a four-game suspension, $1 million fine for the team, and all these other things, is that commensurable to the quote-unquote crime? I think the answer is clearly no. I think the courts aren't necessarily considering that. They're just considering whether or not Goodell violated the collective bargaining agreement, which I think he clearly did. So,
all right. Also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. Elliot, do you have any non-sports thing you want to say right now?
I have not, between like writing and work, I have been unplugged basically from any kind of social activity. So I've become like a hermit in a way. And I'm talking full on beard, like Unabomber beard, hair going out of control. So hi.
Have you become a hermit crab? Have you started living in various hollowed out objects?
The shell is Epcot Center.
Could have still made some jokes with that, but I will not. I will resist the urge.
Elliot just sees like a fucking tauntaun laying dead on the street. He just opens it up and just lives inside it.
Move in, IKEA, set it up.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, fortunately, there's plenty to make fun of in the news this week. So let's get to it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it just a fad. Cause kid, there's consequences to what we say and what we do. While you're dancing like an idiot, they're looking up to you.
An ESPN story that has nothing to do with Tom Brady.
That's incorrect.
Yes. Well, it may be technically incorrect, but in fact, the ESPN story we're discussing does not mention Tom Brady, does not even look in Tom Brady's direction.
That's
but
true.
I'm sure Justin will find a way to tie it back to Tom Brady's balls.
Yep.
So here we are. This is an ESPN article that came out earlier this week about the firing of Curt Schilling. Yes, Curt Schilling is an ESPN analyst and former Boston Red Sox pitcher. Woo. He shared a Facebook post this week that lampooned critics of recently passed laws in North Carolina and other states restricting transgender men and women from using the public restrooms that correspond with their gender preferences. Schilling added a comment to his own Facebook post criticizing transgender people. This is what got him fired, by the way. Quote, "A man is a man no matter what they call themselves. I don't care what they are, who they sleep with. Men's room was designed for the penis. Women's not so much. Now you need laws telling us differently? Pathetic." So, there you go. Curt Schilling fired from ESPN because ESPN put out an announcement to say that they are an inclusive company and that Curt Schilling has been advised that his conduct was unacceptable and his employment with ESPN has been terminated. What say you, gentlemen? Inclusive? Overly inclusive? Or who the fuck cares?
Who the fuck cares?
Who the fuck cares? Really? Who the fuck cares? This isn't a big deal. This isn't a big issue.
No, it is a big issue, but I'm saying who cares about ESPN and anything that they say or do?
Oh, well, I mean, rationally, yes, I agree with that, but unfortunately, many, many, many people do. Which is the unfortunate problem here.
It's a tragedy. Right. Really is.
This article that I linked to, which isn't the one Dan read from, that I linked to in our outline down here on the website, says that ESPN has finally gone full social justice warrior with this firing. They said that this is proof that their agenda is the same as the social justice warrior agenda. And I think that's an interesting claim, and I'm going to disagree with it because I think it actually points to something much more important here. And the important thing it points to is that social justice is actually part of a larger agenda. And it's a larger agenda that ESPN was already running. And this isn't the proof. The Curt Schilling thing isn't the proof. You want to know what the proof of the larger agenda is?
Is it in the pudding?
Well, if the pudding is Tom Brady being suspended from the NFL, then yes. Like, I don't understand why people are suddenly getting upset. Like, oh my god, Curt Schilling was fired. This shows how evil ESPN was. Weren't we ranting about this a year ago? Wasn't it this time a year ago that we all swore off ESPN? I think this is all part of the same agenda. It's all part of the same machine. And they're focusing on the social justice aspect of it. But that's just one arm of this machine that happens to have gotten popular because of the Twitterverse and the social media verse.
The Twitterverse.
What do you think, Justin, of his the author's comment? He says, "They are clearly an excellent demonstration of my impossibility of SJW convergence in action," which states, and this is what I wanted to get your opinion on, when he says, "The more an institution converges towards the highest abstract standard of social and distributive justice, the less it is able to perform its primary function."
Well, yeah, that's necessarily true because you're focused on another goal. That's a different goal because the goal of actually producing something has to be blind to social justice. Social justice is necessarily anti-productivity because you're focused more on people and their feelings than you are about producing.
Yeah, it's something where Adam Carolla has been talking a lot lately about people who sort of have it out for companies who are just in it to make money, who are just in it to make a buck. And his point is basically that's kind of the entire point of a company. That's the entire point of having shareholders and stock, and you make money for them. That is what you do. You are a money-making machine, and the better you can do that, the better company you are per se. And anything that strips away from that, the social justice, the stupid charity things that Apple does, like the Earth, Care for the Green Earth nonsense for Earth Day. All that distracts from you being a money-making machine, and thus you're a worse company for it. So the social justice stuff is an added layer of gunk in the gears of the money-making machine that is necessarily going to be bad for it.
Right. I mean, as Daniel just said, it doesn't matter what the other agenda is. The other agenda could be to eat as much ice cream as possible. That's still not your primary goal, therefore it's hurting you. It's just that social justice is the most extreme version of taking away from your productivity because its goals are so far removed from your values. It's an anti-value social justice. So you're taking a value that's distracting from your agenda that's actually an anti-value. I mean, at least eating ice cream, you're going to enjoy eating ice cream.
Diabetes.
Well, okay, right, that's the point. Is it still non-productive, yeah. Which ends in death. So that's right, firing Curt Schilling, getting Tom Brady suspended, leads to death.
Well, conclusive evidence there. I seriously have not engaged in ESPN things since we swore off ESPN. Like, it's one of the things that I can actually take pride in not doing on a day-to-day basis is not reading ESPN articles. Or visiting ESPN's website, or engaging in their TV nonsense.
Yeah, I don't do any of those things either.
I was explaining to Justin Elliott before the show that I just recently got fucking cable, because Comcast is the devil. I'll explain that later. And Justin asked if I had ESPN. I don't even know. I have no idea. I didn't look for it. I wasn't interested. It's not even on my radar anymore, and my life is so much better because of it. Because I don't have to read their social justice-y nonsense. But we single out ESPN, but this has happened with a ton of publications. I no longer read Mashable anymore because Mashable, which used to be one of the greatest tech news websites out there, is all about social justice nonsense in tech. TechCrunch is becoming that way. The more I'm cutting them out of my life because their social justice agenda, the better I am off. And then, of course, there's the entire Gawker network.
Yeah.
IO9 used to be an incredible resource for science fiction and fantasy and superhero news, and it's just a fucking wet dream of social justice idiocy now.
Yeah,
fucking worse than Tumblr.
Yeah, the other day I tweeted about them because they posted about the new Rita Repulsa costume for the new Power Rangers movie, and they tweeted about how awful it was. And I quoted the tweet and I just said, does IO9 like anything? Because all they do is attack shit. Like, I've never seen IO9 like anything.
Yeah, they don't.
And the rare occasions that they do like things, it's always stuff that regular people would not like. That people, things like you and I, or anybody that's not running around with those crowds and those circles, that it's not the stuff that they would like. It's the stuff that only the people at IO9, among others, and Gawker, that they would like.
Well, and Elliot, the key word you just said there is in that circle, and that folds it back into the whole Gamergate thing and why Gamergate was such a controversy is... these people involved with internet journalism, with these sites that are just content mills, have created a insulated community that controls the conversation, and Gamergate exposed that, and they didn't like that, and that's what the problem was there.
Yeah. It's not even
Well, there's another problem. Rape. Or fake rape. Or rape that people think is rape that's not actually rape.
Is fake
happening
rape
on college campuses?
Frake? Is it Jonathan Frakes? Is that what fake rape is?
Red alert!
No, I don't think it is. I would call it frape, but that would look like frappe, and I think Starbucks patrons would get very confused.
I want to Starbucks now.
Colorado State University Pueblo, if you knew that was a thing, suspended a male athlete for years, essentially an expulsion. After he was found responsible for sexually assaulting a female trainer, problem is that the trainer never accused him of wrongdoing and has said repeatedly that her relationship was consensual. She even stated unambiguously, "I'm fine and I wasn't raped." Yes. But according to CSIP's policies, because this incident was investigated, basically the witnesses in this case have no say over the outcome. It is up to the investigator to decide if there was an incident, which is ludicrous.
Wait, I have a question.
Yes.
She's a witness?
Well, she's the victim. But her testimony doesn't count because she's an interested party.
Well, I don't understand that. Like, if you're a participant, shouldn't that make your testimony automatically count?
No, you see, we have this notion in our culture that you can't be objective if you're the one who's gone through the thing. So
yes, that's why we have a jury.
But this is a university, so you don't have a jury. You have a single investigator to decide everything based on his own whim.
So it's all Ted Wells at universities.
Yes. See, even rape goes back to Tom Brady. So the incident is basically, this woman, Jane Doe, is a trainer, and she isn't really supposed to be involved with athletes, and they became friends, and they tried to push off, but eventually they went to the movies together, and then afterwards they were not drunk, but they engaged in sexual conduct that was consensual. Maybe, we'll find out, the next story holds up. And then they did it again, and again. And at one point, the student, the athlete, expressed concerns about their affection being known by him causing a hickey on her neck. She actually said she didn't care and that she would wear a hoodie the next day. Well, she did wear a hoodie, but it sort of fell off, and another trainer saw that she had this hickey and assumed then that this hickey indicated that the sexual conduct that she and this guy had been having was non-consensual and reported it to the university. So that's how all this started. And even though she has insisted time after time after time that this is not rape, everything was consensual, the university went forward with its complaint against the athlete, and he has now been quote unquote suspended for 2 years, which is essentially expelling him. So that's the backstory. And he basically has no recourse except that now he's suing them because that's the only possible way to get them to listen to anything.
That's why a university should not be investigating this shit. That's why, right there.
Yeah, why don't they just have the cops investigate these things?
Exactly.
Why do universities even bother with their own ridiculous brand of justice? Why don't they just, if it's a crime, have the police investigate and see what really happened? Isn't that what they're there for?
Yeah, that's the second most disturbing part of this article. That this idea that universities are like these islands that have their own rules and their own laws that students have to be beholden to, that nothing gets reported to the police unless the university decides it. That's its own little terrifying thing. Because can you imagine, like, they all exist in, like, these literal bubbles and, like, they, like, plot to destroy the rest of the country? Like, it's just a terrifying thing that it's like almost a little sub-country that you go to for 4 years, and then you leave and you go back to the rest of the country.
Yes, it's like a European city-state.
But the most terrifying...
That was a really
thing,
obscure joke. Okay.
Yes, it was. Don't explain it.
Okay. I won't.
All right. The most terrifying thing. What do you think the most terrifying thing about this is?
That people are still giving each other hickeys?
No. That a guy can be accused of rape even if the woman says, "I wasn't raped and I wanted it." That is
is that a scary part?
Yes, that's terrifying. That is terrifying.
Yes. Well, I get you. I think it is terrifying.
Coupled with the next story, why would a guy in college ever have sex?
Well, listen, if you are a college guy and you are afraid of women doing this stuff to you, look for us gay boys. We are happy to assist you with any sexual expression that you might need to engage in.
Elliot, are you supporting the rise of bromosexuality?
If I can get in on some of it, absolutely I will support it.
Get in?
Yeah.
Get in.
So this is sort of absurd on its face, but coupled with this story, which might be my favorite story of the week, because it is something that started off as a joke and has become reality because of the farcical nature of our universe.
This was a joke on the recent season of South Park.
Yes. Students are told they must take photos with a consent contract before they have sex.
Oh, my gosh.
A yes means yes advocacy group, the Affirmative Consent Project, is instructing college students to take a picture with a contract before they have sex with each other just to make absolutely sure both parties are officially consenting. In fact, the group has been distributing contracts to schools nationwide as part of its Consent Conscience Kit. That's CCK, not KKK, according to an article in the Washington Examiner. If no camera is available, students are encouraged to fill out the form on the back of the contract, which states, quote, on this date, fill in the blank, we agree to have consensual sex with one another, followed by a space for students' printed names and signatures. The kit also handily includes breath mints and a condom. What say you, gentlemen? Will you be taking pictures with contracts before you put your penis in it?
Hell no.
In the contract?
Yes. Be very
depends.
Fuckable
how much
contract.
Am I getting paid?
Paid?
I mean, paid?
Yeah, if I'm signing a contract to have sex, I'm a professional at that point, aren't I?
I didn't quite think of it that way. Interesting.
Does the here's the next step. Does the notary public have to notarize the document before it becomes legitimate?
So where's the witness?
Yeah, are all frat houses and sorority houses now going to have one member who's the official notary public of the frat and the sorority?
And then, of course, there's going to be that one bitchy woman who wants to be the notary, and everyone's going to call her the connotary.
And here's the other question. When you're a notary, that means you have to get somebody else to notarize your documents, correct?
When you are a notary? No, you notarize things.
So you can notarize your own consent contract. You're not like the cuckold of the fraternity because you're the only one who can't have sex.
Oh, I see what you mean. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that works. I'm not sure if a notary needs a notary, like a meta notary.
Well, I think you would because it's non-objective if you're notarizing your own document. That's really easy for forgery.
I really don't think much is notarized anymore, actually. I think that's pretty much a dying business.
That's the next step of this, isn't it? Because some woman's going to claim the document was forged or she wasn't able to actually, you know, she was too drunk to actually sign it. She wasn't in her right mind. So you're going
to
need
a
witness.
You have to be 100% sober when you make these contracts. You cannot have consumed anything that impairs your judgment.
Right. So you're going to need a notary to notarize these. A bonary
yes.
is what you're going to need. A bonary public.
Oh, goodness.
You may have started a new industry, sir. Get that bonary app to market as fast as possible. It's like Uber, but you have a notary go around and notarize.
Hey, that's a really good, actually, you just took that and you turned it into a profitable idea. I am a notary public on demand, so when you need your consent contract notarized, I will be there in 20 minutes or less.
That's right. I'll be there before your hard-on goes down, sir.
Ah, that's what I was going to say, before your Viagra runs out.
I'll come before you do. That's all
right. Oh!
This is it. This is our million-dollar idea. We're going to do this so that we can give you podcasts daily.
Bonery public.
Somebody out there in our audience has to be in Silicon Valley. Make the idea. Code the idea.
Yes, that's right.
My mid-better.
I think there's another issue with this, to take the social justice stance of this, which is you may have consent at the beginning, but how do I know you are continuing to give consent throughout the entire process? Shouldn't you have to stop every minute, 30 seconds, whatever the time frame is, to sign another contract to make sure that sexual contact can continue? Because otherwise, what if I just change my mind in the middle? When does the contract end? If the contract says, for instance, this will be a 30-minute sexual encounter, which if two drunk college students are going at it for 30 minutes, power to them. What if you change your mind in the middle? Do you still have to fulfill the contract, the sexual contract?
Yeah, I mean, what if I put it in your butt in the middle?
I don't think there are butt addendums. I think that's a whole separate contract.
That's what I'm saying.
That's not a subsection. That's a completely different contract. There are a lot of issues with this contract idea that I think they haven't thought through, not the least of which is that it's stupid.
Can you imagine how creative these kids are going to be, though, to take these pictures? I mean, the poses and the different faces. Oh my god, the death lips. It will be, like, I think there's gonna, in some way there will be some genius that will come out of this. Because kids are going to take pictures of themselves for the contract, and they are gonna do amazing things with those pictures.
Can you imagine like 16 and 17 year olds taking pictures of themselves with these contracts and then being arrested for having their own child porn on their phones?
Well, that's what's going to happen, because what's going to happen is they're going to, you know, try and make it part of the foreplay, right? It's like, why don't we take a picture of you signing it with my dick in your mouth? And then they do that, and then there's porn on their phone.
Use my pen like a penis.
Now. It happens now. There's that kid up in, I think it was New Jersey. He had a, he sent a photo of himself to his girlfriend, and they caught his phone, and even though it was his own dick, it was child porn. Because he was a child, and it was his own dick.
Well, speaking of porn that no one wants to see, this is why I don't watch television. The Maury Povich show last week had 21-year-old Circe Hayes on to face cheating allegations from her boyfriend, Freddie Green. After proving that Green was indeed the father of her 3-month-old son, Hayes walked away to focus on her family, only to find out after the episode that the internet had dubbed her the spitting image of presidential hopeful Ted Cruz. So, xhamster.com has offered Miss Circe Hayes $10,000 to star in a 6-minute sex tape with her boyfriend, Freddie Green, and she has accepted. So we now have someone who looks vaguely like a presidential candidate about to release a sex tape onto the public. What say you, gentlemen?
Don't ever tell me that this country is fucked financially, okay? If we have $10,000 that we can just give to some fat woman because she looks vaguely like Ted Cruz, we're doing just fine.
I love the guy's response, her boyfriend. We might want to buy a truck, pay off our house, and we might get married. I never had anyone say, here's $10,000, go make a sex tape.
Not a big thing in his life. Not a lot of people walking up and down the streets offering $10K for a sex tape. Not happening a lot. This was when, by the way, this is my favorite part of the story. Hayes said she'd never heard of Ted Cruz before her brush with internet fame and doesn't believe she looks like him. First of all, where the fuck have you been that you have not heard of Ted Cruz in the past year? What are you doing with your life? Watching too much Maury Povich is what you're doing. She says, quote, the eyes are different, and he's got a bigger nose than I do. Well, that just clears it up.
And also, he has a penis. Yes, we get it. You're not the same person as Ted Cruz. Understood.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the fact that she hasn't heard of him proves why Donald Trump is winning. It's a marketing thing.
It's always a marketing thing. What? So, this isn't the first... Okay, I'll rephrase it. What is our cultural obsession with people who look vaguely like Ted Cruz? Like, didn't he get compared to one of the Munsters recently?
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you this question, so I'm glad you brought it up. They also say he's the Zodiac Killer, too, that he looks like the Zodiac Killer or something.
And also a guy in a hairband.
Yeah.
What is our obsession with people who look vaguely like Ted Cruz?
I was going to ask you if it's because he's the more threatening candidate, that if he actually gets the nomination, that he could actually beat Hillary, whereas Donald Trump can't. So this is some weird leftist way of discrediting Ted Cruz by making him look, quote-unquote, because they say he's creepy, making him look, quote-unquote, creepy, or making him look, quote-unquote, non-presidential. That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, I mean, it's their way of mocking him, I think, also. Not just trying to delegitimize him, but it's their way of just mocking his idea in the public consciousness.
Well, yeah, but that's how the left, I agree with you, they're mocking him, but that's how the left delegitimizes the right. They've been doing it for years. As long as I've been alive, they've been doing it. They mock, but the way they mock is they pick some point and they use it to delegitimize. I mean, look what they did to Sarah Palin, right? They decided to say Sarah Palin's dumb, and that was how they mocked her, and all of a sudden everyone believes she's dumb all of a sudden. I'm not a huge Palin supporter, but the fact that they did that is truthful.
And not only that, I mean, people actually believed that she said that line about seeing Alaska or seeing Russia from
Russia.
Her house. Yeah, that was from Saturday Night Live. She didn't actually say that, but you would be shocked at how many people attribute that line to the real person and not to Tina Fey's performance.
Right.
It's all just a form of cultural depravity that we put up with. And it's not, look, previous elections, going back to the very first elections in this country, have had this sort of pathetic nonsense that people do to discredit. There was a lot of rumor about Andrew Jackson's illegitimate children, for instance, and Ted Cruz and sleeping with slaves, or Ted Cruz. See what I did there? Thomas Jefferson and sleeping with slaves. It's not uncommon. It's just that this is what we now take as clever political rhetoric.
Right. I mean, you know, at least when you're saying Thomas Jefferson slept with slaves, you fucking probably actually did. Now we're just saying Ted Cruz looks funny. Like, one's like a man's choices and actions and deals with sex, so it's a little salacious. And then one's like, this dude looks funny. Where are you now, social justice warriors? Why are we judging a presidential candidate by how he looks? Isn't that unfair?
Yeah. It's all ridiculous. I mean, I've gotten to the point where it's a long shot that Ted Cruz is going to win. And even if he does, can he beat Hillary without an indictment? Who knows? So I'm all in. I'm announcing it right here. Trump 2016. I just want to watch the world burn. Fuck you guys. Not you personally. But.
Now that you've thrown in with that, it's interesting you've said that. We may address that in a little bit here in a few episodes or so. I want to talk about the non-political issue on this story.
Oh, there is a non-political issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's political adjacent, obviously, because it has to do with Ted Cruz. But
is it the fact that Maury Povich is still on TV?
No, I understand that. Maury's reasonably, like, the man is a reasonably well-spoken man. Like, I can understand why he's on television. He feels a certain...
Well-spoken? The only words he says is, you are or are not the father.
But that's like Chris Hansen. Like, can you have a seat? Would you have a seat? Like, he delivers those lines. Really, how many people have had careers off of catchphrases? And you're gonna get mad at Maury for that?
Yeah, one of them's about to become president.
Fair enough. I don't know. I might vote for Maury. I don't know. It depends on what his stance is. But, no, the non-political point, and it's political adjacent, is they're paying this woman $10,000 because they believe there's enough of a market for people who would watch a fat bitch get fucked because she looks vaguely like a presidential candidate. This is porn.
You're shocked at the marketing elements of this?
No, the content. This is porn. You really are going to jerk off to some, like, I don't know. There's like two levels of perversion here. One, she looks like a presidential candidate, but two, she looks like a male presidential candidate. So are you going to hate masturbate to this? Like, you're just jerking off, like, oh my god, yeah, she looks so much like Cruz. Take that, you fucking fat pig Cruz. Yeah, take that. I don't understand this at all.
I don't think that that's what they're going for here. This sounds like purely promotional. Hey, look at all the media attention we're getting because we're paying this woman $10,000 for porn. I think it's not even about the content. I think they just want the attention and the publicity for what they're doing.
Well, I think they overestimated how much they had to pay then, because in today's day and age, they could have done it for at least half that, if not a quarter of that.
Well, going off of what they said, the couple themselves, yeah, I could have gotten away with half that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So if it's purely that, and Daniel, do you agree with him that it's purely that? If it's purely that, they overpaid.
Well, I mean, how much is all this media exposure worth? $10,000? I think that's nothing to this site. I think these porn sites have this kind of money to throw around pretty easily. So, all of this is a stunt. It's purely media driven. I don't think people are going to, I mean, there will be some subset of depraved human beings who will pleasure themselves to this Ted Cruz lookalike being screwed by her boyfriend. That will be a very small number. Actually, let's play a game. What do you think the over and under, what do you think the number is?
I still can't believe it's over by her boyfriend.
Or under 999 people who will actually masturbate to this video unironically?
Oh, over? Under. It's over that. Over 1,000?
Over 999 people?
Yeah, over 1,000, I give you over. That's over.
No, I think it's under. If for people who actually are going to masturbate to it, I think it's going to be under that.
This is the entire world we're talking about. There are 7 billion people in the world. There are at
okay,
least.
But first of all, at least a billion don't have internet access. So
hey, it's still 6 billion people. You're telling me there aren't 1,000 people out of 6 billion who like stupid fat chicks getting fucked by stupid fat guys?
Okay. As you noted earlier, this particular fat chick had never heard of Ted Cruz. So if they log into Xhamster and they see, Ted Cruz looks like it's pounded in the A, do you think they're gonna fucking click on it? Cause they're gonna be like, Ted what? See some Mexican? I don't wanna watch no Mexican get screwed. No?
We'll just leave it at that, silence only.
Not a legitimate point.
I just think they'll look at the picture of two ugly fat people and be like, that looks like me. I want to watch porn like me.
I think it's under $9.99. But I also think that if we had a counter and like we could actually count it and that the number was at $9.99, I think Justin would do it just to prove me wrong.
You would be the person?
Yes, he would be the one who ticked it over.
Actually be the person just to show us up.
I couldn't do it.
Are you kidding? If it was 998, you'd do it twice just to prove me wrong.
She's
That's how much
Asian.
You like proving
Why
me wrong.
Why would I watch porn with her in it? She's not Asian.
Can't you put like a Snapchat Asian face filter on her? It's not available yet.
The next great app evolution. Put whoever's face you want on your porn.
On site. Porn. Yeah, that's, I think, a $1 billion idea for Snapchat right there.
We've had $2 billion ideas in this podcast episode.
Are you listening, angel investors? That's right.
It's like, Silicon Valley where Richard Hendricks was interviewing to be the director or the VP of tech or whatever the fuck it's called. At a company that wanted to figure out how to put mustaches on people's faces on the internet.
Yes. Exactly. You're just going to replace faces in porn. It's
All
genius.
Right. Well, Daniel will tell us in a few minutes here, in a couple seconds here, after the brief little musical interlude that James sometimes likes to mock. If Disney had a $1 billion idea, let's find out what I'm talking about in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. So Daniel, I'm really interested in what you're going to say. In our review section here, you wanted to talk about The Jungle Book because you said you saw it. And I'm really interested in what your review is going to be here because I had no interest in seeing this because I was like, why do I want to see a, you know, live action version of an animated movie when I can just watch the animated movie? Especially after I saw Maleficent and I was like, I did not want to see lesbian Avatar. So... did they do the same thing to The Jungle Book? Because it is directed by Jon Favreau, who, if no one knows, or if you're unfamiliar with him, he was an actor, and then he directed the first two Iron Mans.
Are those Irons, man? Just kidding. So, first of all, Lesbian Avatar is the best description of any movie that has ever existed. There is no more accurate description of a movie than Lesbian Avatar for Maleficent. But,
whenever I can.
Yes, it's very good. It's tremendous. Is that a Katrina thing? Did you steal that from Katrina?
No, you don't want to know who I stole that from.
Okay, I don't want to. So, Jungle Book. I also did not want to see it originally, and I resisted FISA. My fiance went to go see it, and she asked me if I wanted to go. I was like, fuck no, that looks horrible. Why would I do that to myself? And then she came back, said it was fantastic, that she loved every second of it, and that I should see it, and I still pushed it off. And then other people I know, who I trust their opinion saw it, and they said it was fantastic, so I finally broke down and went to go see it. It's excellent! It's genuinely an excellent movie. And here are the primary reasons it's an excellent movie. One, the acting is tremendous in the movie, all throughout. There's only one sort of terribly cast voice character, and that's Scarlett Johansson as the snake. Not sure why you would cast Scarlett Johansson as the snake. It was a terrible decision. But other than that, Bill Murray as Baloo is outstanding. Idris Elba as Shere Khan is just excellent, and then Ben Kingsley as the black one, whose name I can't remember, the panther who finds Mowgli is awesome, and the kid who plays Mowgli is so fucking engaging.
What about
Louie? He is a tiny oh forgot about Louie. You know who plays Louie in this movie?
Louie Anderson.
Christopher Walken.
Oh,
what? That's awesome.
Yes, and he sings, and it's cool.
Oh, so they do sing in this movie.
They do. There are a few songs. It's not throughout, but they sing the Bare Necessities, and King Louis sings his like song.
You.
Yeah.
Oh, you may have just put me in the theater. Like, that was, like, one of the major reasons. Because, no, if you're going to see The Jungle Book, they better fucking sing the Bare Necessities and I Want to Be Like You.
And they do. They do sing them.
Oh, now I'm finding I'm having a hard time resisting this now.
Yes, look into the eyes of the snake and just go. So there are a couple other things. The directing of this movie, I mean, Jon Favreau is a dick, and in real life he's a horrible human being from what I hear. But the directing of this movie is some of the best direction I've seen in a long time. He did the opposite of what a Darren Aronofsky would do with this, which is he made the directing about the scene, about the characters, and what could drive the story, instead of, oh, look at this cool thing that I could do with a fucking camera. Aren't I the greatest director ever? That's my impression of Darren Aronofsky. And the directing is just outstanding from frame one to the very last frame. It's so beautifully done. And then the third thing, which I complain about constantly in movies with mixed reality animation, meaning animation inside a real life story, is that it looks shitty. This movie is unbelievably good in terms of animation. Not all of it is 100% there, but there are certainly scenes where the animals are involved where it is impossible to tell that they're not real animals. And it's kind of scary at points because they start clawing at things and jumping at the screen, and I can't imagine if you watch this in 3D, you wouldn't have had a heart attack. But the animation is... the animation is next level animation. It's very good. Very good. The one flaw I would say in the movie is that it does the thing that all movies must do now in order to be credible, which is it has to go dark. Not to say like Mowgli gets ripped to shreds in the end. Spoiler alert, he doesn't. But the movie is a much darker version than the cartoon. It's, there are times when it is painful to watch some of the things that Mowgli has to go through and some of the evil things that Shere Khan does, which are sort of softened in the animation. It's really dark, and it makes you confront a lot of things, maybe in a older Disney-esque way, like a Bambi Disney-esque way, which is good. I mean, you can go that route, and I think it's good to have profound movies for children and movies that confront issues, but I think this movie went kind of far and went dark instead of weighty. What's the word we were using last time we were discussing this issue?
Yeah, it was weight. Narrative weight. Weight.
Yeah, instead of having weight, they just went a little too gritty. Not naturalistic per se, but a little too gritty for a children's movie.
Yeah, so that's probably my one. Emulate the Christopher Nolan romantic realism of The Dark Knight, basically, of that trilogy.
Yeah, and I just don't think it works all that well for a children's movie. I mean, Zootopia has weight to it, and there's a seriousness, and there are consequences, and this movie accomplishes that to some degree, but ultimately it's scary, and it feels frightening, and sometimes like it's a fright that won't be overcome, and I think that's not the greatest thing for a children's movie, but if taken in an adult context, it's very well done. So I highly recommend this movie. The music is outstanding, the acting is outstanding, except for Scarlett Johansson, and the animation is just unbelievable, so... Go see The Jungle Book.
One to ten.
1 to 10. Like an 8.
You gave it Superman.
It's a more entertaining movie than Batman versus Superman. Would I say it's a more consequential movie, or a movie that has more profound themes than Batman versus Superman? No. But it is a more entertaining movie outright than Batman versus Superman. For me.
Somebody go wrong.
I may very well change my opinion of Batman vs. Superman when I see the full extended R-rated cut. But for now, I stand by my criticisms of that movie, and I think it was very poorly edited and deserves the bit of a knockdown that I gave it.
Well, yeah,
even though
I mean,
it's still a good movie.
You read the quote I sent you guys from the editor, right? Of the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, but remind the audience who didn't read it.
Well, basically what happened was Zack Snyder handed him a 4-hour movie and he cut it down to 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Should have kept it at 4 hours. I would have watched it. I still would have watched it.
I would have watched it twice. Yeah.
Right.
I would have watched it 6 times.
And going back, I watched it for a third time over the weekend, and it was very obvious what he cut out, because Zack Snyder has previously said that we basically kept all of the Batman and Superman stuff because that's the main thrust of the movie. But if you watch it with the knowledge that they edited stuff out, any scene with Lex Luthor or the politicians or any of the minor characters, all they did was cut around the major lines and kept those in there. So those scenes with, like, Lex Luthor where he feeds the guy the Jolly Rancher, like, if you notice the opening of that scene, like, suddenly they're stepping down, they're like, stepping away from everyone else and being like, let's bargain. Like, clearly there would have been a setup and a transition in there. And all the stuff with him and the Senator June Finch, like, that's all truncated just so he can hit his big lines. And I think that's why a lot of people had trouble with Lex Luthor, because a lot of what made him so evil, I think, was cut out of the movie, because we didn't see a lot of his manipulation, a lot of his machinations.
So, yeah. Zack Snyder, if you're watching next time, just let it be 4 hours. If you're listening, let it be 4 hours.
Or well, I mean, no, Zack Snyder's talented enough that he could watch this podcast.
That's probably true. He's probably visualizing it in his head right now.
In his mind's eye, you can see everything.
He's fucking storyboarding it.
You can see Justin not wearing a shirt sitting there recording.
How did you know?
Because I fucking know you.
Elliot, what did you say? I was going to reply to that.
Oh gosh. Next time, just make it 4 hours. I would see it. I seriously would sit in theater
and watch. It's not up to Zack Snyder, though. This goes back to Watchmen, where he made a deal with the studio where he said, I'll release, as long as you release the, you know, director's cut on DVD, you can release whatever you want in theaters. And I believe he probably did the same thing here. And that's sort of, I think, his bargaining chip for getting his movies into the mainstream. Does that make sense? So his vision is still preserved by having the Ultimate Edition released on Blu-ray, home media for people to own, but at the same time, it's made over $850 billion worldwide for a smaller cut of it, which still has the main thrust and main ideas. So it's not up to him that it got cut this short. That's what the studio wanted, but I think he makes that deal just so he can get his films out and keep making movies.
Money, though, for the studio if they would do at least a limited theatrical run of the Ultimate version. Because I would love to see it, the full run of it, in a movie theater, in 3D, with Henry Cavill sitting right next to me.
And a popcorn on your lap.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's talk about some other things we might want to see. Let's do our trailer takedown here. We've got 4 trailers.
Trailer takedown! Sorry, I feel like we need, like, a sound effect.
I know, and I'm thinking about actually doing it like Shark Tank in the future, where I actually play the audio. And as we listen, we make a sound effect when we're out, because of whatever takes us out of the trailer, where we're like, we're done, I don't want to see this. And then you have to explain at the end why you dropped out at the point you dropped out at. I'm thinking of changing it to that.
That's cute. Trailer takedown! Yeah. I don't have a good bass voice, but yeah.
Independence Day Resurgence, official trailer.
I'm out.
So,
this is going to be my... This is, you know, this is how I am with movies, though. It's like, independent, nope, done, forget it, fuck you. It's already happened twice, I don't care anymore.
So, there wasn't anything in this trailer that stuck out to you?
Yeah, it sucked. That's what stuck out to me. Look, I kind of get that we want to make all these things for a new generation. I can forgive it in the case of Star Wars in the sense that It is a movie that has incredibly lasting appeal, a huge franchise. It's beloved by millions, maybe even billions. But this is Independence Day. who was clamoring for this? Who was sitting at home going, oh my God, they have to release another one because what happens when the aliens come back and on another July 4th? Like, who the fuck cares?
They like to target now, the landmarks.
God, such terrible dialogue in this nonsense. Look, if you're excited to see this movie and it brings you joy and you really did like Independence Day, go see it. I mean, we're never going to tell you here at the Midside not to go enjoy something that you think is going to be of value to you.
Except if that's like killing people and raping people. Don't do that.
Yeah, please don't.
Who are we to judge? But I wish I would advocate with people. Stop patronizing this nonsense. Stop rewarding the studios for creating schlock and for creating the same thing over and over again. New. We need more. We need competition. We need new things.
Elliot?
I mean, I'm probably going to be one of the people that goes to see it just because.
Perfect response.
It was in my child. Like, no, this is like, it's for pure childhood, you know, kind of reminiscent, you know?
I don't know because there are so few things from my childhood that I have any interest in. Star Wars is probably like it. Star Wars and the Sword in the Stone by Disney. But that's it.
DuckTales. I do want to see it. I don't know that if it's going to be good or not good, but I mean, it was when I was a kid. I mean, especially like, you know, middle school, junior high. Independence Day was just a fun movie for the summer. It was the summer hit of that year. I think it was like 1996, 1997. And I remember elementary school, we had all the, we used to call it ID4. So we used to call it, and then we used to have like the merchandise from there, and people were quoting the lines.
That's the difference though. Like, I agree with you completely, and that's the difference here, is there was one of these a summer pack back then. Now, how many are there this summer?
Way too many.
Right, so why am I going to choose this one? There's nothing that stands out in this one.
Well, my argument to Elliot, and that's a good point, Justin, my argument to Elliot or to anyone is, look, you know what you can do right now for 99 cents through Google Play is buy Independence Day. Buy it, watch it on your 50-inch flat panel TV in 4K high def, and relive the glory days of that summer. Don't reward the studio for making a schlocky version of the thing that you love. Says the guy who loved Episode 7. But
next trailer.
No, but we don't know if it's going to be schlocky. That's the thing.
It's going to be schlocky. Have you seen the trailer?
You're stretching, you bigot.
It's so schlock.
I know what's definitely schlock. The next trailer.
Schlock and load. Yeah.
The second trailer for Warcraft came out. This is the World of Warcraft movie. I'm going to go first here because I want to say, I don't get it. This doesn't look like anything to me. It just looked like they spent a lot of money on CG, and I have no idea what the fuck is going on with anything. Like, the first trailer at least seemed to have some sort of story about, like, here's an orc who's going to cross the lines, and that's what humans and orcs are going to find peace with. But now it was sort of like, we all have to fight or we all die. And I'm like, well, I guess that's sort of consistent with the title.
Fight what? It's like, if we're not all fighting, we're all going to die. It's like, or you could choose not to fight and all live.
Right, exactly.
I don't get it. I mean, this is purely something that I know appeals to a particular fan base, and that fan base is big enough that this movie will make money.
Is it?
Yes,
I get that.
Oh,
yes. Oh, yeah, it's definitely big enough. It's the largest online game ever. Like, it's going to make money. And I understand that. I personally don't get the appeal. And this film does the other thing that I'm not a big fan of in modern movie making, which is when I was first playing Warcraft, I never really played World of Warcraft. When I was playing Warcraft and you have the humans and the orcs, you pick one, but you know that the humans are the good guys and the orcs are the bad guys. Now you can play as the bad guys and that's cool, but they're the fucking bad guys. This movie,
like
it's like,
Star Wars,
oh, we're not
the Old Republic.
All that different. Yes, exactly. You can pick the Sith or the Jedi, but you know the Sith are the bad guy. This movie does a thing with the orcs where it's, oh, they're not that bad. They're misunderstood. At heart, they're just like the humans. They have children and loving wives and families. And it's just a big misunderstanding. Can't we all just get along? Why can't the orcs be the bad guys? Why? Why
you know
do we have to make everyone
children?
Relatable?
You know who else had children?
the Russians.
Many people.
Hitler.
On the planet?
No, wait, he didn't have children.
Did he?
Get children. In like South America.
You know who else had children killed? Hitler.
Hitler did.
Yeah.
Elliot, are you going to see Warcraft as well?
No.
Okay. Next trailer. And this is one that I know Daniel found exciting, so we can let him go first.
Yeah.
The Founder. This is a trailer that I thought was about the guy who founded McDonald's, but then it seemed to be like the guy who stole the idea of McDonald's from other people. I don't know the real story of the founding of McDonald's, so I don't know how truthful this is and how much this is, what's his name, rewriting the Social Network story for Mark Zuckerberg.
So, I mean, this trailer looks interesting in the sense that I think the founding of McDonald's would be an interesting story. And so Ray Kroc didn't start like the actual McDonald's restaurant, but he is quote unquote the founder in the sense that he's the one who brought it to everyone. He's the one who came up with the concept of franchising it, and he's the one who made it a beloved institution across the United States. Now, how much sort of leeway they take with that story, unclear. I think the trailer devolves into some pretty odd drama near the very end. But I think it's an interesting enough story.
Did he steal it?
I don't think he stole it, but I definitely think there were disputes between what he wanted and his shares in the company versus what the founding brothers wanted and their shares in the company, as there sometimes are in companies. But I don't know what the genuine story is. I'm interested in seeing it, especially because it looks like Michael Keaton. I haven't wanted to see anything with Michael Keaton in it since the godforsaken Birdman movie. But he looks like he puts on a really great role in this, so. Elliot?
I haven't seen the trailer yet, so I'll wait till you see it, Dan. I'll be second-handed about it.
All right. Last trailer. It's the official teaser for The Birth of a Nation. Now, this is not a remake of the original film, which is what I thought originally, and I was like, wait, this isn't the same thing. And also, my summary of this trailer is that I can't give a summary because I don't understand it.
It's true. The trailer doesn't give you a lot to hold on to in terms of plot, character, intrigue, drama. Like, it's just sort of a series of scenes and then some reading of a passage from the Bible, which didn't make a lot of sense. But.
Right, which de facto doesn't make sense. So it's sort of like, right. Here are things that doesn't make sense that are punctuated with something that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so here's the description underneath the YouTube video that they actually wrote out is, set against the antebellum South, The Birth of a Nation follows Nat Turner, a literate slave and preacher whose financially strained owner, Samuel Turner, accepts an offer to use Nat's preaching to subdue unruly slaves. As he witnesses countless atrocities against himself and his fellow slaves, Nat orchestrates an uprising in the hopes of leading his people to freedom. So it's quasi, didn't Nat Turner actually lead a big historical uprising? So it seems like it's quasi historical.
Okay.
I mean, there is a possibility for me to see this, not from this trailer, but if there are future trailers that actually give you a story and there's actual drama and intrigue, I could see it. But I'm kind of tired of seeing white people are evil movies.
Yeah, I'm slavered out. You know what I mean? I'm just out.
Yeah.
Out. No more.
That's what
Done.
They said, and that's why the Civil War happened, too. They were like, we're slavered out.
Yeah. Just get it out,
man.
That's
the greater purpose of this movie, right? The original Birth of a Nation was black people are evil, so now they're making a movie called the same thing, that's white people are evil. I mean, I think the director even said that. I mean, not exactly what I said, but he said they're taking back the title, is what he said.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Birth of a Nation is... It's historically an important film because it's a silent epic film on like a huge scale that used thousands of extras and was incredible, but it is fairly racist film and actually helped form the next wave of the KKK.
Yes. All right. Let's talk about some movie news now. The first one will speak to Daniel's points about creating the same schlock over and over again. Apparently, Hasbro is getting in on this cinematic universe thing. They've hired a whole bunch of writers. There's some comic book writers in here. There's some successful television writers. But the point I want to make here is, audience members, can you name one thing Hasbro has done? Do you even know what Hasbro is?
A toy company.
It's a toy company.
Right.
So, fucking Battleship?
No. G.I. Joe. And then this is what else the article says. So they have G.I. Joe, which is fine, right? Like, okay, whatever. You know, they had Rod the Rock in the movie. Cool. The Rock and Channing Tatum in a movie. Can't really be that bad. But the other properties are Micronauts, Visionaries, MASC, which stands for Mobile Armored Strike Command, and ROM brands. I don't know what ROM brands are. So, Daniel, do you want to rant a little bit about this?
I mean, are children going to be familiar with these things is one of my questions. Like, are these things that modern-day chillin' like to play with that we just as old fogies have no idea what the hell they are? I mean, does everything need a universe? Can't we just make one-off shit anymore? Like, I understand you want to make money. That's your thing. I'm not against that thing. But you are in the business of making money in terms of art. So could we make some art? Or do we just have to be ATMs? Is that what we are? Okay. I don't get any of this. When you said Hasbro and Cinematic Universe, I had literally no idea what the fuck you were talking about. It was like the board games are talking to each other. Like, life interacts with fucking Battleship.
Well, they already
tried
to do that Battleship movie, like, remember?
Yeah, I remember. It was shit.
All right, so let's go to some real Cinematic Universe talk now. The first is, we didn't talk about it here, but Spider-Man previously got a title for his movie, his first Marvel movie, Spider-Man Homecoming, and it has been rumored...
Really?
That, yeah, you didn't hear about that?
I didn't. I don't listen to the podcast,
no.
So if you talk about it on the podcast,
no, we didn't
I have
talk
no
about
idea.
It on the podcast, but I talked about it on Snapchat. You really need to follow me on Snapchat. I put up a picture of it and said, Spider-Man Homecoming? I can't wait for Spider-Man Sadie Hawkins.
That's clever. Here's the thing about Snapchat or anything you send me on the phone is I almost never listen to the sound on any given thing. So unless it's not purely visual, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, part of the reason I do Snapchat is I've endeavored to challenge myself to come up with interesting visuals every day. But sometimes it is fun to rant. But getting back to the topic at hand here, it was rumored Michael Keaton was going to play the villain in this movie, but now it's been confirmed that Robert Downey Jr. is going to have a guest role here, I guess. I don't know how that works cinematically, as Iron Man.
Good. Just because they want this movie to be successful, so they have to put Iron Man in it?
Right, so nobody wants to see another Spider-Man reboot, right? So I guess they have to put Iron Man in it?
Also, why would you need Spider-Man if you have Iron Man?
Because
what does Spider-Man add to anything?
Because Spider-Man is like the most marketable superhero, or something like that.
Really? I don't know, I never got the Spider-Man thing. I kind of get it a little bit when you're like a teenager and you have some angst and you're going through that and you can identify, but I don't really get it. Like, he's
right.
Not that great of a superhero.
And that's what they're supposedly doing here. I think that's why it's called Homecoming. I mean, it's obviously tongue in cheek because chung in cheek. That sounds vaguely racist. But because it's him coming back to Marvel, so it's the Homecoming that way. But it's supposed to be based around like his high school years, so I'm sure it's probably going to be about the Homecoming dance somehow. Which sounds really fucking lame.
Who is this marketed to? And listen, audience, if you think Spider-Man is the greatest character in all of Marvel, well, tweet at the Midside and tell us why we're wrong, but who is this marketed to? Who is going to go see this?
Well, Spider-Man was created by an objectivist, wasn't he? Steve Ditko? Didn't he create Spider-Man?
Yeah, great. You got the objectivist crowd, all 99 of them or whatever? Like, okay.
How many? Is it more, over, under 999 people this is marketed towards?
Yes, I think it's more than 1,000 objectivists will be masturbating in the theaters to Spider-Man. So, that what we're betting on? Oh, no, it's not it. Okay.
Okay, so let's talk more Marvel now. So I found an interesting article at Screen Rant, and one of the discussions that's going on now is after the supposed quote-unquote failure of Batman vs. Superman, at least critically, people are wondering why Marvel is successful. Is it due to their formula, quote-unquote, or is there no formula? Well, this article at Screen Rant tried to argue there wasn't a formula, it's just the way they make movies, which they didn't really clearly delineate the concepts. But I thought their description of what Marvel movies are is interesting because I think it reveals something about these movies that I think is a little bit disturbing and I think is a major weakness. And I think it's the difference between Batman vs. Superman and these movies. So this is what they say about the Marvel movies. These are character-focused stories first and foremost, and everything else comes second. Making the main characters likable, or, rather, compelling enough to fall from film to film to semi-annual crossover event is the focus, and the arc of the story is usually also the arc of character growth. Which means, yes, the world can be on the verge of ending, as it typically is in these movies, and it's all just more opportunity for stunts and one-liners, because the drama is meant to be in whether or not the good guys overcome their personal demons and, where applicable, maintain their friendships. But again, a recurring theme doesn't necessarily constitute a formula. Is this the recurring theme of Marvel movies? And is this also their inherent weakness?
That's a lot to unpack. There's a lot there.
Easy question here in the midside.
Jesus.
The reason why it's successful is because it can market a really terrible sense of life with a lot of bright colors and a lot of humor, and with very charismatic characters. But that's pretty much it.
Well, can we... I mean, I don't know. There's a degree to which the success is based on the fact that you have, like, for instance, you have incredibly strong actors in these roles. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, whoever cast that just needs to be given more money. Like, just shove money in their face. Just be like, here, you deserve this. Because that's incredible. And then the other thing is, I think the movies have enough in them. It's sort of like bad drugs. Where it gives you enough to give you a little bit of that high, but it leaves you wanting more and you're never truly satisfied. So you keep going back to see what the next part is. The movies are all connected such that there's never a genuine resolution to any of them, which I think is it's a genius marketing tactic in the sense that this is what TV had been doing for quite a while, but I think Marvel has learned to do it on a grand scale.
I agree with that, but what about this idea of they're solely character-based movies? There's no sort of broader significance. Isn't that sort of when we talk about, even though these are more mixed movies, right, these are mixed romanticism, naturalism, isn't this ultimately why Marvel is sort of more naturalistic than, I don't want to say DC because Snyder's the only one besides, you know, Nolan, but Snyder's the only one who's done a DC cinematic universe movie. Isn't this why they tend to be naturalistic where Snyder tends to be romantic? Because there's broader thematic significance to what's going on beyond this just character growth? I mean, it's almost sort of narcissistic in a way that, oh, everything's going on, the world's going to end, but it's about the superheroes looking good or bad. I mean, that's why in Age of Ultron they had to have them save the civilians. Because it was, we're going to make our superheroes look good.
But I also think that the question also is, when they talk about characters, I mean, the characters in these films, at least from an aesthetic point of view, should be representatives of human beings. And representations of man. When you ask yourself what Marvel's idea of what man is supposed to be, and you contrast it with what Snyder's vision of what man could be and ought to be, then that's, I think, where the biggest difference and the distinction lies. Because you have something like at the end of Age of Ultron, and this is the example that I always use, where you have Vision, who is supposed to be like the ideal. In this movie, the ideal that we as viewers are supposed to look up to, and he basically just agrees with Ultron, the villain, that the human race is doomed. Compare that with Bruce Wayne's speech at the end of Batman vs. Superman, where he says that human beings are still good. Even though we're not perfect, we can be better. We have to be better. That right there, to me, you want to talk about characters and characterization, that to me is a much clearer distinction than whether or not they get along with each other or whether or not they save an entire city of people.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, Elliot. Exactly what you've identified is what I'm talking about with this sort of weird narcissism of it. Batman versus Superman, Batman's plot is ultimately, and this is reflected in Lex Luthor as well, is about him overcoming his trauma, his psychological trauma, to realize that people are still good. But as you're saying, Marvel sort of hides that, where everyone acts like, you know, that everything's happy-go-lucky and all their action sequences are punctuated with jokes and it has this lighter tone, but they never get away from this idea that people are all ultimately bad, because it's all ultimately about us growing, but we never grow and go anywhere. I mean, that's why they've had to do what they did with Tony Stark, right? If you look at the three Iron Man movies, all of those are him getting better and better. Even the third one, as I like to say, is the response to Avengers, where it's like Whedon fucked his psychology. So the director, I can't remember the director of Iron Man 3, but he spent the entire movie having Tony Stark work through his PTSD to the point that he again said, "I am Iron Man" at the end of the movie. But then what did they immediately do again in Age of Ultron? And what are they doing in Civil War? They're doing the same thing, having him again be flawed and broken. But there's never any getting over that. And that's the entire, as this writer's saying, that's the entire focus of these films, is having them grow, even though, as Daniel's saying, they don't ever really go anywhere.
No, the movies themselves are just vehicles for the next movie. I mean, I think that's been a critique of Marvel for a while. And it's one that's sort of given tongue-in-cheek as like a joke, but it's actually an incredibly serious problem with their art. Because art needs to stand on its own. It needs to be an independent thing. You can't just rely on it to be the setup for the next piece of art.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just a perpetual circle jerk of Marvel nonsense.
I'm saying what you're saying actually resonates even deeper, because it resonates in there, as Elliot's saying. I'm reconciling your two point of views. I'm saying it reconciles with the idea that these characters there's this negative view of humanity. And it's through the characters, supposedly, it's the focus is on them growing, but they never really grow.
Yeah. Now you've depressed me. Thanks.
Well, while we're at it, why don't we defend something good? And we're talking about Snyder's view of man. Why don't we talk about Snyder's view of woman? So this article on independent.co.uk tries to describe the problem with Zack Snyder's female characters. He's, of course, talking about the Queen in 300, the women of Sucker Punch, the women in Watchmen. And they give him a free pass on Wonder Woman because he didn't create Wonder Woman. So apparently, even though he didn't create Watchmen, it counts. But this is what they say. This is the key paragraph. And I want to see what you guys think of this. The problem with Snyder's female characters doesn't lie with his intentions. The idea of utilizing his Baroque, larger-than-life female heroes to carve a narrative in which victimhood gives way to empowerment has the potential to be a force for good. I'm going to say an aside here. Isn't that basically how I summarize Sucker Punch?
Yeah.
Back to the quote, even of hope and inspiration. The issue, moreover, lies with its repeated use, driving an implication that a woman's power isn't native or naturally born, like so many of his male characters, but can only be driven out of total disempowerment and suffering. Now, this is the point I want to make about this. When this author says disempowerment and suffering, I think this is taking a negative view of life and assuming that we're all starting with disempowerment and suffering. Because what I mean by that is, if we're all born tabula rasa, then we have to find our own power and empower ourselves. So it's not disempowerment in a negative sense, it's just that's the way we're born. And in that sense, that's the same for Snyder's female and male characters. Leonidas didn't just start powerful, they showed all of his training. He had to kill that wolf. I mean, Man of Steel, the entire movie, is about how Superman fucking becomes powerful. He may be born with certain, you know, physical traits, but his true power comes from his psychology and his philosophy. And that's what Snyder's movies are about.
Because, you know, when I think of the Queen of Sparta, You know, the two words that pop in my mind are disempowerment and suffering. Sarcasm.
Well, their point is that Snyder can only show her being that way after she was raped by the council member.
No, she was always a badass from the beginning. Only a real spotted woman can give birth to spotted men. I don't know why I made her British. But, I mean...
It's because of Game of Thrones. We'll blame Game of Thrones.
She's a badass from the beginning. So, no, sorry. That column doesn't fly. It just doesn't work.
I have a much simpler and sort of dismissive critique of this article, which is that social justice is never mollified. It doesn't matter the kind of empowerment you give to women. If the fact that you do it means that they are going to attack you for doing it in a way that is not the way they prefer. They're going to attack you no matter what you do because it's not exactly what's in their head as the only possible platonic ideal way of feminism or empowerment or women's rights or whatever it is. Social justice cannot be satisfied under any circumstance because it is necessarily inward, emotionally driven, and thus nothing external can satisfy it, period.
All right.
So okay. I dismiss this outright as nonsense.
I think that sums that up, and I think that sums up our entertainment segment. So let's head into our last part here where we delve into the depths of the internet. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way, EA Glow, Steam Rocks, God Rest, Form on Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. We're going to start out with a serious Reddit here. What's the best thing to do every day to improve anxiety and depression?
You want more anxiety and depression? That's probably not what he meant. There are some really simple things, I think. I've never had depression. I probably suffered a bit of anxiety when I was younger. I never had depression officially other than sort of general teenage angst. But some of the things that actually relieve those feelings to some degree, as long as they're not clinical, are exercise. And it doesn't have to be like where you're running on a treadmill all the time. Just do anything physical. Go for a walk, shoot some hoops, play croquet, as long as it's like extreme croquet, so that you're actually moving. Listen to music that really gets you going. I would probably suggest that it's not something super poppy, but at least something that has some really deep meaning. And don't pick the stuff that makes you cry. Don't pick the depressing shit on purpose. Don't take my suggestion that, you know, to listen to some music that gets you going, some high energy stuff, some upbeat stuff. Listen to Sam Cooke or Ella Fitzgerald or fuck, listen to some classical. And then
a little Dancing Queen gets you going.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And then the other thing is, if you are in a situation where you have friends around you, reach out to them, talk to them, make plans with them. Don't assume they're not going to want to hang out with you or don't assume that they're busy. And you don't have to be like, hey, I'm feeling down to hang out with me. Just be like, hey, I really want to hang out with you. I think it's, I really want to be around you and do some cool things. And make plans, do that. So those would be my, only after the consent form is signed and notarized.
And the picture is taken.
That's bonotary.com.
Yeah, remember, call your bonery.
That's right. So those are my three things, probably in order of difficulty.
my only suggestion would be, like right now what I'm doing, unplug for a while. You know, I'm not on any social media right now, except obviously Skype to record the show. Sometimes you just need to get away. Put yourself away for a while. Grab a notebook and just, you know, just unplug and write your thoughts down and just kind of be a little bit more present in the house, you know, in your home and catch up on your spring cleaning. You know, just focus on you and on the things that are immediately around you that you can kind of take care of and just do it for a little bit, you know, just kind of get away from the world for a while, take care of yourself, you know, and then you just, when you're ready, then you can kind of take a step back. I mean, I come back to social media. I'm coming back to Facebook on this Thursday, the 28th. I've been, that will mean I will have been off Facebook for 28 days.
And in a lot of ways, it has made my life a lot better. And not having Twitter in my life at all has made my life a lot better. That doesn't mean I won't ever go back to Twitter in the future, but I don't need it right now. And it has helped to make me a lot happier. So, you know, and look into unplugging and just taking time unto yourself for a while.
And I would say, as you're doing these things, these are all great things to do, to take some time to yourself, to hang out with friends, to exercise, all these things. These are great pieces of advice. But I would also say, look at your mode of thought. Look at your methodology of thought. And odds are there's something wrong with the way you're thinking and the things you're telling yourself. And I know that's harsh to hear, and it's doesn't seem right when all you're used to, it's normal what you're thinking to yourself. Like, those are the only thoughts you've ever had. That's the only way you've ever known to think. But to a certain extent, when something's that wrong, when you're in that much pain, that means something needs to change. That would be like you keep walking on your ankle and it hurts and you just don't do anything about it. You're like, well, that's just the way I walk. It just always hurts when I walk. If that happened physically, you would get a doctor to look at it, and you would, I don't know, get it in a cast, or if it's broken, whatever you need to do to fix it, and you would learn how to walk right again, or walk right for the first time. Psychologically, it's the same way. Something is wrong, and it's incumbent upon you, if you don't want to be depressed anymore, if you don't want to be anxious anymore, to figure out what is wrong and fix it. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with saying there's something wrong. In fact, that's a good thing to say there's something wrong. It doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you a flawed person. I mean, think of it this way. If your knee's busted, if your ankle's busted, are you a bad person? Like, you just didn't, you walk around with a bum ankle and you're just like, oh, my ankle's broken. No, it's not.
An objectivist turn to you and say, you immoral fool!
Exactly. Ironically, we don't talk about that often, but isn't that what happens in the objectivist community? Somebody's got a broken ankle and they call them immoral for it?
It's broken, yep. And they're screaming at you, ankle is ankle!
Your ankle is broken because you're a bad person. It's the same thing. Just figure it out and ask for help. People will help you. There are people out there to help you. Your friends will help you. And just fix the way you're thinking. I mean, it's not simple. I'm making it sound simple, but it's not.
And if none of that works, then, you know, hookers and blow.
Smoke some weed, a little spliff, Mary Jane.
As straight edge, I do not advocate any of these activities. Thank you.
As straight edge, I have no fun and I'm lame.
Yeah, that's it.
Burp, burp, burp. Burpity burp.
Because this podcast is not fun. Right, listeners?
This is your drug. This is your drug. If you were true straight edge, you'd give this up too.
Next Reddit. This is one of their shower thoughts. In video games, you gain XP from success. In real life, you gain XP from failure. Now, I've included this Reddit and the next one because these are fucking sayings that I hate and I want to unpack a little bit more. I fucking hate this idea that you gain intelligence and you gain knowledge from failure, so it's okay to fail. No, it's just that you're gonna fail, and you should always learn from anything, therefore you're gonna learn from failure. It's not, well, go out and fail because that's how you learn the best. No, you know how you learn the best? By fucking doing shit right, because then you know how to do fucking shit right.
My first reaction when I read this was, you don't gain experience from success in real life? Like, yes, you absolutely do. In fact, you gain the most experience from success.
Is that what XP is? Experience?
I know that. I'm not a gamer. Yes, XP is experience points.
Outdated OS. I don't know, man.
So, like, when you win a battle in Final Fantasy, you get experience points, and that's how you level up. It's just we have this myth in our society that the way to get better is to fail. No, the way to get better is to try to succeed, and if you happen to fail, figure out why the fuck you failed so you can do it right.
Yeah, don't, you know, kick yourself, but you did fail, and you need to accept that. That's part of reality, and then move on. Learn from what you did, but don't be like, yeah, failure! Bow, bow.
Like, continuing the broken ankle metaphor, if you break your ankle, it doesn't make you a bad person. If you fucking jump off the building and break your ankle, that doesn't make you a bad person. It just tells you, don't jump off the fucking building again.
Yeah.
But you know what? You would have learned more you would have had a better experience and had more experience points if you just walked out the door and didn't have a broken ankle.
This door opens. Amazing. It's also, it ties into another cultural saying that's not in this, but I find this so stupid that I don't want to talk about it, that Adam Kroll has been railing about. There should be a counter, by the way, at times you mentioned Tom Brady or Adam Carolla, but which is he's been really railing on this phrase, I did my best, because he's like, the last thing I want to hear after one of my employees royally fucks up is, sorry, boss, I did my best. Because you just did your best, and you royally fucked up. Shouldn't I fire you if that's the absolute best you have and you still fucked up?
Right, this is not like, delineating, because what they're doing is they're taking what I just said and they're flipping it on its head. They're saying trying your best, giving all of your effort, is the equivalent of doing your best. That's what they're saying.
Right.
And it's not.
Indeed.
It doesn't make you a bad person if you give all your effort and you fail. That still doesn't mean you did your best. I mean, let me put it this
way. It doesn't make you a bad person, but I want to clarify that it's not something you should take and think you should be rewarded for.
Well, right. That's what I was just going to say.
Okay.
You mentioned Adam Carolla. Now I'm going to mention Tom Brady. Do you think Tom Brady tries less hard in the games he loses than the games he wins? No. He doesn't try less hard, but he still doesn't play his best in the games he loses. He still tried as hard. So what they're doing is, I don't know if it's a package deal or it's a waffling on the phrase, or it's equivocating is the word I'm looking for. They're equivocating on the phrase, try my best, is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Effort does not equal outcome. It can lead to outcome, but effort plus execution leads to outcome. So you can say, sorry boss, I tried as hard as I could, but I clearly didn't execute that up to my level of ability. You can say, fine, do it better next time. But if
or how about, how about just, yeah, I messed up, I'll do better next time. How about that? Not, I tried my best. Well, fuck, I should fire you if you tried your best.
Right.
Which is why Adam Carolla now says, don't do your best, do my best.
That's a good one, too. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Last Reddit. This is another one of those fucking phrases that I want you guys to just tear apart. Or tell me it's right. Life pro tip. Never make someone a priority for whom you are only an alternative. And I fucking put this on here because I've seen this fucking quoted since I was in, like, high school.
Okay, first you're going to have to unpack 100% what that means for me.
This is like
I think I get it.
That's like saying, like, if somebody doesn't want, if you're, like, someone's backup plan for hanging out on the weekend, they should never be the person you want to most hang out with. That's what that's saying.
That doesn't make any sense.
Look, why don't you just make yourself the priority and don't worry about anybody else, and there you go.
Yeah. I mean, how can you be an equal priority to every person that you would want to hang out with?
I mean, I guess as an abstract way, I guess I understand what that quote is trying to say. Don't give more effort into something when the other person isn't going to give as much effort. I guess in the context of relationships, that's what it's referring to. But at the end of the day, just make yourself a priority. That's all you do. Don't worry about other people.
Well, I mean, I kind of get that. So, I mean, if we're going to give some sort of benevolent interpretation here, it would kind of be something to the effect of, like, don't get taken advantage of. Like, you know, have a traitor principle in your relationships where you are getting out of it what you put into it. But I don't think that's exactly... We're getting what you want out of it, but I don't know, the way this is phrased is disturbing. It makes it's sort of an egalitarian kind of approach to relationships where, look, there are people who I hang out with who, like, we do very limited things together. Like, we might go bowling together or we might go watch a movie together, but that's all we would ever do. And if that person called me up and was like, hey, I want you to be the best man at my wedding, I would say, no, I don't feel comfortable doing that. Does that mean we shouldn't hang out at bowling? Does that mean we shouldn't go get drinks together sometimes? Like, it's perfectly acceptable to have different various levels of values in relationships with other human beings as long as you're not exploiting or being exploited.
Right. So basically what this is doing, I understand this quote now, is it's second-handed because it drops context. You can have someone, like, when you go bowling, your priority is to go bowling with those people on that night. But they're not always your priority. And this is basically saying it's an absolutism where it's saying someone's either always your priority or they're not. Or you're always someone alternative or you're not. So it's a false dichotomy. It drops context. Like, the priority of hanging out with someone or treating someone a certain way changes based upon context. I mean, even in a relationship, right? Like, when you're at your job, you're not always answering the phone for your significant other, because it's like, sometimes you have to have the priority of work. And at that point, they're your alternative. So based upon this principle, wouldn't they say fuck you and never talk to you again?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, part of it is that this principle is so unclear that it can't possibly be a principle.
Right. So, this drops context. It's a false dichotomy. There's just a lot of things wrong with this. And I'm glad we talked about it, because it cleared it up in my head. Because I've seen this over and over again. And I think it's ultimately what Elliot's pointing out is it's second-handed, because it wants you're defining how much you value someone else by how much they value you. And I'm not saying, you know, if someone doesn't value you, to value them, because obviously one of the reasons for valuing me is, or for me valuing you, is if you can be smart enough to see that I'm awesome. But that's not the only reason.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
So let's put a bow on this episode. What did we learn this trip, Daniel?
Well, I learned that we're in the fucking wrong business. There's no money in podcasting, but there is money in billion-dollar Silicon Valley ideas, like the bonotery or the...
It's the bonery.
I think you need the tree in there, like bonotery. We'll work on it. We'll put the marketing division on it. But the Asian face swap on the porn. I think that's at least a $1 billion idea. So we really, really need to get out of the podcasting business.
So fund us, someone. Fund us. Elliot?
Be our angel.
I learned that there is a woman that looks like Ted Cruz, and apparently a lot of people want to jack off to her while having sex with their boyfriend.
Under 1,000.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that a lot?
Under 1,000. But all the same, I need eye bleach. Mind bleach.
Justin, what did you learn this trip?
I learned that if you actually sit down and pick apart these platitudes that proliferate on the interwebs here, that you will find that there are very many logical and philosophical errors in them. And that gives me a lot of...
What?
Gives me a lot of comfort, but it also horrifies me because of the way people repeat these and live by them.
People make mistakes on the internet. What are you talking about?
Like I said, I've seen this quote way before the internet, so...
No. Okay. Well, we are on the internet, and we don't make mistakes. And we know that because you're our fans. And how could people who make mistakes have great fans like you? That's right. Sucking up time. Fans, we love you, and we want to make more of you. And unless you're going to actually physically breed with one another, the only way to make more of you is for you to tell someone else about this show, for you to go up to a stranger on the metro or whatever dangerous transportation system that you take in your city on a daily basis and say, you, sir, you look like someone who likes good pod. And these people, they give good pod. So you should go to themidside.com/podcast and check them out. You should tell this person to go to our Facebook page.com/themidside. You should tell them to go to twitter.com/themidside. And then you and them, over a sweet, sweet cup of coffee, can together go to patreon.com and put in your credit card number and choose to give us just a few pennies, dollars, tens of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars per episode, per piece of content that we create. And then we can get to more of you. We can send our voices into the ether all over the world and just make an army of midsiders. Isn't that really what we want? That's what we need to fight the social justice warriors, by the way, is we need actual warriors. Like, we need men with swords to fend off these feminist bitches.
I think that was the movie 300, Daniel.
Men with abs and swords. That's what we need. So sure. We need funds to do that.
And that helps. Any bit helps. But even if you can't give money, tell a friend. Rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Just help us spread the word. Special shout out to our Liberty.me listeners. You guys also rock, and girls, for listening and making us one of the most popular podcasts on that network. So thank you very much.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this trip. This concludes your journey into the Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
Woo! Woo-hoo.